called vaccination the single most important medical intervention in history. Why so significant?
The single most successful medical intervention. The number of lives that have been saved through vaccines is staggering. Other than clean water, which is the only other human-made intervention in history, this is the second most effective intervention ever established by humans. And it's the only medical intervention, really, that does that.
There is vaccination research happening, I suspect, all over the world. What is it that's happening right here in Perth at the Telethon Kids Institute that has drawn you to it?
Yeah, so I think maybe I'll take one step back before I answer that question in the more detail. The Telethon Kids Institute is so exceptional that I think most people in Perth and in Australia really probably don't even realize how exceptional it is. The structure, the leadership, the vision, the power and the passion to implement and address newest problems is tremendous. The one example that you already brought up was the universal influenza vaccine. It's been exactly 100 years that the Spanish flu killed more people than all world wars combined killed in 1 year. We still don't have a vaccine that works to protect us all against all flu strains. Telethon Kids has seen that as a need and has put their focus on that, and that is part of the reason that I am here.
What is the Human Vaccines Project hoping to achieve?
The Human Vaccines Project is, in the name already suggested, is an analogy to the Human Genome Project. That whole genome project was given birth about 20 to 30 years ago. People were sequencing a little bit of DNA there, a little bit of DNA here, and nobody put this all together. They realized that this has to be a massive coordinated effort. $10 billion later, we now know the human genome and revolutionized diagnostic therapeutic interventions that we all benefit from today. Similarly, and just to put this into perspective, the human genome consists of about 30,000 genes. That's all of us on average have 30,000 genes. The human immunome, which is just the variability within what our immune system, our host defense system can do, is orders of magnitude higher, meaning up to 1,000 to 1,000,000 times higher, and more complex, therefore more difficult to decipher. The Human Vaccines Project uses the exact same approach that the Human Genome Project used, namely coordination of the best in the world, dedicated funding and focused effort to make this work and decipher how the immune system actually protects us from disease and from infection in particular.
And so if you can tap into that, does it mean the end game could be vaccines that last a lifetime?
If I give you just one small example, most of us, it's a requirement in Western Australia and in most other states as well, have received the hepatitis B vaccine. The hepatitis B vaccine is typically given as 3 doses, some countries in 4 doses. About 30% of us respond with after just 1 dose with reaching protective levels of the response. 70% after 2 doses and about over 90% after 3 doses. What is it about those 30% that makes them respond after just 1 dose? We don't know. If we would know that, and that's what the Human Vaccines Project is working on, if we can find out what makes these 30% respond with just 1 dose, can we help the other 70% become those 30%? And with this, make single-shot vaccines, and that's what you already alluded to, single-shot vaccines for any of the targets that we have vaccines for, a reality. And quite frankly, it is a reality. Within 2 years, we should be able to do this for most of the vaccines that we have here right now.
Wow, that's incredible. Is funding an issue? I mean, you mentioned that in mapping the human genome, it was about, you know, $10 billion worth of investment. Do we have enough money involved in this?
Well, there is enough money around, yes. Is it dedicated to this purpose? No. And that is exactly, that's the only real hurdle left right now. I know that there's many scientists who always tout the next breakthrough and cancer cures and everything else, but really within this case, we know how to make those 70% that don't respond, respond. So if we can make everybody respond after just 1 dose of a vaccine with the dedicated funding to actually implement these findings, we should be here within a couple of years from now. So yes, money is actually the only hurdle left.
Just going back, you talked about those 30% of people who would respond to a vaccine and only need it once. What about on the flip side? And I've had this where I didn't respond to rubella when I was pregnant. So I was sort of told to keep away from schools and I had 2 shots and it didn't do anything. So Is that part of, you know, why is it that some people don't respond?
No, absolutely. So obviously, if you try to identify why do some people respond, you also need to look at why do some people not respond, then compare and contrast. And with this, you find out where the signal comes from, then drill down what the exact cause and effect is. And that's what we're doing right now. That's exactly the type of work. What you just outlined would be an ideal experimental setup to figure out what we need to do to make this work with one shot for everyone. And importantly, one shot for everyone for life. And if I may get back to the influenza, there's a beautiful phrase, the first flu is forever, which means whether you've been infected with influenza or received the influenza vaccine, the type of flu that you've been exposed to in that scenario, be it vaccine or infection, will set you on a path to always respond in that manner forever. And that is a great risk. If you get infected with the wrong flu and then a new flu comes around a couple of years later, you don't respond to it very well. But it's also a huge potential. If you immunize a baby before they get exposed to influenza in the environment, with the vaccine that protects you from all of the flus, you have it set for life. So the first flu is forever. A single-shot vaccine given early in life promises protection for life.
We're talking with Professor Tobias Coleman, who said we should call him Toby, by the way, when we first asked how he would like to be referred to. Joining us from the Telethon Kids Institute, he is a vaccine researcher. You're listening to Nadi Mitsopoulos and Russell Wolf on ABC Radio Perth and WA.
And he's happy to take your calls if you have a question.
Yeah. You specialise in paediatric treatment. What's the potential then for the early vaccination with babies? It's very good.
Mm-hmm. It is very good. Just to put this into perspective, most infectious diseases, suffering and dying from most infectious diseases happens early in life. Like all of us middle-aged folks, like we kind of have an infection here and there, but not really a big issue. Other issues are important there. But most infectious diseases matter early in life and they matter in low-resource settings, which is why that single-shot approach is also so important. Imagine in a country where you have barely any medical facilities and public health facilities, if you can protect with just one shot, you will save incrementally more lives just because of the logistics. Forget the science and the biology, just the logistics and money and all that involved. So pediatric is the major target. Earlier in life, newborns in particular, is even more important because most deaths happen, infectious deaths happen within the first month and in low-resource settings, including low-resource settings here in Australia. Same as in Canada, we have many marginalized populations where getting medical treatment appropriately timed and targeted is very, very difficult.
Could you have a vaccine? So you talked about multiple strains of flu and having one vaccine that counters all of those. What about different diseases? So is there a possibility that you could have, I mean, we have it a little bit now with multiple, but there could be one vaccine that would protect you against 7 or 8 or 9 different potential infectious diseases?
Mm-hmm. As you already pointed out, there is vaccines where we have combination vaccines where we were able to combine multiple target pathogens.
It's usually only a couple though, isn't it?
It's about 5 or 6 depending on which country you're in. And there is issues obviously when you mix them all together, they might have interactions with each other and the like. So it's not a simple answer, yes we can, but for sure that is possible, and how to combine these will take work. And this is, again, getting back to what you asked. Money is the only hurdle that is left right now, because if with appropriate funding put into place, this can be overcome. And really, we're not talking in like crazy amounts of money. I mean, it is going to cost money, that's for sure. But it is something that can be done. And if you imagine the impact this is going to have, the number of lives, and with this also economical benefit that you're going to have, is tremendous. And if I may add one last thing, which is, again, bringing us back to Perth here, the type of research that's needed to implement this is going to spin off a whole range of different economical opportunities. So doing this research here in Perth, Telethon Kids is the only pediatric center of the Human Vaccines Project in the world. It is the only currently international partner of the Human Vaccines Project in the world, which tells you how important Telethon Kids is to this project and how well-respected and renowned Telethon Kids is.
So because we can make those vaccines here.
We can make it here. And more importantly, getting back to the very beginning, the yes, we can attitude that is so characteristic for Western Australia is also present within the leadership, both the Telethon Kids Institute, the Perth Children's Hospital Foundation, and also within the Ministry of Health with Roger Cook here. So there's a very, very strong impetus to say that we can make this happen here. And this is why I'm here.
How long have you been here, just out of interest?
Just a month.
A month. You've done very well there. you sound like a local, Toby.
Well, this is why I came. So I did my homework before I came.
And he knows the weather's nice here. But so the reality then, or the potential, is that in the future we'll have less rather than more vaccines.
That's correct.
Shots, rather. Yeah. And ideally, you have a couple as a baby.
And that's it.
And then that's it. Yeah. How far off do you think that is?
Not crazily far. So for the flu already, trials are going on for the universal influenza vaccine, and we are part of this. 2 years, 3 years before there's reasonable candidates that could be tested in a broader scale. And the same thing is going to be true for every other target that we line up. So depending on money and how fast this can actually be arranged, we're not talking more than 10 years. We're talking less than 10 years.
And that would have to constantly change, though, would it, as strains change?
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, you won't.
So this is correct. So currently the flu vaccine is adapted every year because there's a new flu strain. But what we're talking about with the universal influenza vaccine is one vaccine that will target all flu strains.
So even if a new strain develops in 5 years, this vaccine could still work against that
as
well.
Yes.
Because our body, the vaccine's working on our body to be able to provide immunity.
And the targets that are currently being used for the universal influenza vaccine designs are such targets that will be present in all of the influenza strains.
Whenever you speak in public, you must be expecting a reaction from anti-vaxxers. How do you respond to those that are against vaccinations and doubt their effectiveness?
Yeah, first of all, I mean, there's two things to be said about this. One, being skeptic is crucial in science. You always have to question, is this right path, is this the right choice? So that's nature of a scientist. So I'm always open to being questioned. I question it myself. The second piece is I'm also very sympathetic to this, out of personal experiences. I've seen both a lot more infectious deaths, but I've also seen people have adverse response to vaccines. Those are a reality, absolutely. So I don't think that there should be a camp of pro-vaccine versus anti-vaccines. I think this is a very personal experience, a very, very personal decision in the end. There's risks associated with either choice that you make, and assessing these risks is a very personal choice in the end. So by no means is this polarization as it currently happens helpful for anyone.
Just a question on the text. This person asks, pharmaceutical companies won't support this because less injections means less money. So it will never happen if they're successful. Do they have much influence over research?
They have influence over the research in the sense that they're not here to tell us what to do. We're certainly collaborating with everybody around the world, and why wouldn't we? We would want to work with the best of the best, and some of those will include industrial partners. But what you just pointed out is complete opposite. The vaccine manufacturers are strong supporters of the Human Vaccines Project in the search of a single-shot vaccine. And this is something that's a big misconception, and I can't speak for all of pharma industry, and I would never do that. I'm not involved with them. I'm not working with them. The perception that, especially amongst the vaccine manufacturers, that they are all out to make money. And I think there's plenty of examples, and I'd be happy to count up some of those examples, where the opposite is true, where they've really invested heavily in low-resource settings, where they've provided free treatment, free vaccines, and the like. So almost all vaccine manufacturers are sitting on the table with the Human Vaccines Project as observers. They're not making the decisions, but they're privy to the data that is being generated, just like most academic centers are privy to that. So they're very much in partnership with the Human Vaccines Project. This is not us versus them, no.
Is this admitting that the vaccine, Bob asks, this regimes we now have are not ideal?
I think that's a fair statement for everything we do in medicine. I'd be happy to elaborate on this. There's a huge range of things that we do in daily life, which is not optimal. There's a huge range of things that we do in current practiced medicine, not just vaccines, that we do that is not optimal. To put this out there, much of what we do in medicine, let's say you and I go to a general practitioner, about 85% of what we get recommended, those are reasonable recommendations, they're not wrong, has never been studied in a randomized placebo-controlled trial. 100% of what we use in the vaccine field has been studied in that manner. It is the only field in medicine where everything that we suggest has actually been studied. Does it mean it's optimal? No.
Brilliant. Wow. Professor Toby Coleman, it's really nice to be able to sit down or stand and talk to you for a little while. And it's so encouraging to meet you and to hear your enthusiasm and the obvious passion that you have for your trade.
And we need to stay in touch with you because
we're very keen
to see what you develop. How long are you here for? Well, as long as it takes?
That's the first answer.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. But we will spend much of our time in low-resource settings. But really, I'm also looking forward to spending the rest of my life here.
Well, we welcome you with open arms. Professor Tobias Coleman from the Telethon Kids Institute, thank you so much for coming in.